It's been 20 years. Iconic guests.
My guest is Danica Patrick.
I mean, you've been doing this for 17 years. You might be the OG of podcasts.
We all know this gentleman. Let's give David Stern a big round of applause. In 2004, we launched Sports Business Radio, and David was kind enough to be my first guest. He was just joking in the green room that he launched my career. So.
He hasn't let me go since. It's really impossible.
My guest is Emmett Smith. I think being authentic, being who you are, and being unapologetic about it, and being open to receive knowledge in areas that you may be unaware of, that's okay too.
My guest is NBA Commissioner Adam Silver.
International growth is something that I'm always thinking a lot about, and both for the NBA and for the game. And it's a recognition that nothing is preordained.
My guest is Bob Costas.
You know, Brian, as you said, I've been so lucky and did so many things that I could never even have dreamed of doing. All I really want to do now is return to the things that are most truthful to me as a person and a professional.
The biggest names in sports.
My guest is Maria Sharapova.
I wanted to be in those rooms and I wanted to be in those meetings because there was something inside of me that said that although tennis was a big part of my life, it wasn't going to be my life in capital letters. And I had to become savvy and smart. A big part of sport is business.
Our guest this week, Sue Bird.
Who told you I'm a bowler? That's hilarious.
I read that you're like a good bowler and you break 200 when you bowl. Is that not true? Is that false media report?
No. That's all fact.
Welcome to year 20 of Sports Business Radio. Now, here's your host, Brian Berger.
Well, thanks for joining us on this edition of Sports Business Radio. We wanted to dedicate most of this episode to the business of Caitlin Clark. She really has become one of the biggest things in sports, certainly one of the biggest things in college sports. Her team, the Iowa Hawkeyes, have advanced to the Final Four this weekend in Cleveland. From ticket sales, TV ratings, to sponsorship deals, her all-time leading scorer, dazzling style of play has made her an attractive star to companies like Nike, Gatorade, State Farm, and Gainbridge. And we're going to talk to Minji Rowe, the chief strategy officer of Gainbridge, about why Gainbridge signed Caitlin Clark. It's really interesting to talk to the people who construct these deals, these endorsement deals. So I thought it'd be interesting if we brought Minji Rowe on from Gainbridge. We could go inside their deal with Caitlin Clark and really talk about why did they sign her? What do they hope to do with her? What kind of audience do they hope to reach with her? That's coming up on our show this week. Griggs, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah. And I think there's so much involved in these deals these days. You know, it's not like back in the day when you signed your name on a napkin at, you know, dinner. It's so much more constructed and there's so many moving parts. And Caitlin is obviously the biggest thing in women's sports right now. So yeah, it's fun to talk to Minji because she's got a lot of behind the scenes of how it works.
I mean, she had Jason Sudeikis at her game against LSU, Nick Nurse, the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. You've got all kinds of people sharing their thoughts about her on social media. She really is a trailblazer. I mean, I know we've seen some great women's basketball players before. We've had two of them on this show, Candace Parker and Sue Bird. Amazing, historic women's basketball players. But there's something about Caitlin that has grabbed the public's attention. Obviously, the way she plays, her style. You know, you're seeing TV ratings. Finally, we're putting women's sports on ABC. It's not hidden on, you know, ESPN2 or somewhere that it's hard to reach. And the ratings are panning out. Griggs, for the Final Four this weekend in Cleveland, if you wanted a ticket, you could get a ticket before the Iowa LSU game for $392. Now you're going to pay over $700 for a ticket to the Final Four. So you see the Caitlin Clark effect. Obviously, you've got South Carolina playing. You've got UConn with Paige Beckers. I would expect the Paige Beckers and UConn versus Caitlin Clark and Iowa matchup to be maybe the most viewed women's college basketball game ever, breaking the record from last year of LSU and Iowa in the finals. If we get to South Carolina and Iowa in the finals, that could top the UConn-Iowa game. So I think we're going to see record-setting ratings. It is on ESPN. It would be interesting to see if they move the women's Final Four to ABC. That would be interesting. But I think, you know, one of the things we'll talk about in this episode is just, you know, the business of Caitlin Clark and how much money she's earned. But she's been a trailblazer for women's sports. And hopefully this breaks down all remaining barriers for women's sports. And we see them covered in the media as they should be. We see people going to games. We see people investing in franchises like WNBA and NWSL. We've got other leagues that have popped up with women's pro hockey, women's pro volleyball. I still think it's undervalued, but Caitlin Clark is kind of the trailblazer that's, you know, opening up doors for a lot of people here.
It's definitely helping for sure. And we're seeing that effect. And, you know, it's going to be fun seeing her move on, you know, the WNBA effect. She's going to grow that business because obviously she's going to be huge for, you know, draft night and opening night and all these games that they can package around her. So, yeah, I think I'm with you. I mean, women's sports, it's growing and it's not growing fast enough. We need to keep going and keep putting this stuff on and getting it mainstream. And it's just so fun to watch. I mean, these games have been absolutely fascinating the last couple weeks.
I will say this before we go into anything with Caitlin Clark here. The women have much better fundamentals. Like, for instance, throwing an entry pass. Boy, the LSU team can throw an entry pass into Angel Reese. Like, some of the things we don't see on the men's side, just basic fundamentals, like throwing an entry pass down to the post, the women have this down flawlessly. And their fundamentals are so pure. So that's been fun to watch. We're not seeing dunks on the women's side and above the rim, but we see great shooting, great passing, easy things like the entry pass, Griggs.
Yeah, and the screens. They do some of the best pick and rolls you'll see. I love the screen and rolls and the kick out passes. You're right. They're technically really good. And I noticed that in women's soccer too. I think women's soccer, their passing is just dialed. I think the passing is so pretty in women's soccer. They just know how to move the ball up the pitch so easy, and it's fun to watch.
All right, let's dig into some numbers here with Caitlin Clark before we get to the conversation with Minji Rowe from Gainbridge. First of all, it's worth noting that Gainbridge, you know, you'll hear Minji talk about this, but they already have the naming rights on Gainbridge Fieldhouse, which just happens to be home of the Indiana Fever of the WNBA, who just happened to have the number one pick in the upcoming draft. And I think we would all be living under a rock if we didn't think that Caitlin Clark was going to be the number one pick by the Indiana Fever in the upcoming WNBA draft. So you've got some synergies between Gainbridge and the WNBA already. A deal with Gainbridge and Caitlin Clark makes a lot of sense. The other reason this makes sense for Gainbridge is they already have deals with tennis legend Billie Jean King and golf legend Annika Sorenstam. So they add Caitlin Clark to the portfolio of spokespeople that they have. And with Caitlin Clark, as you'll hear Minji talk, they're trying to reach a younger demo, right? Obviously, you've got a little bit older demo with Billie Jean King and Annika Sorenstam. Now you're going after the younger demo. So we'll dig into the reasons that Gainbridge did this deal, but I wanted to point those things out because there is synergy between the Gainbridge Fieldhouse, the Indiana Fever, and Caitlin Clark. All right. Caitlin Clark has had an NIL valuation of 3.1 million deals. That's thanks to deals with big brands like Nike, Gatorade, State Farm. Even Panini signed Clark as the first woman to an exclusive trading card deal. So she's got some big deals. Obviously, the Gainbridge deal that we're going to talk about here in a little bit. Griggs, last week, Ice Cube's Big Three offered Caitlin Clark $5 million to play in 10 total games. Now, it's worth noting, on her WNBA rookie deal, Caitlin Clark would make $76,535 in year one. She'd make $338,056 across four seasons. That's just her salary. That's not endorsements. But you can see, and she passed on this opportunity with the Big Three, but $5 million when your salary is $76,000, Griggs, at least it should get you to pause and maybe consider it for 5 minutes. What do you think?
Oh, for sure. Man, if I got that call from Ice Cube, I'd be like, yeah, let me think about that for a little bit. Let's see, 76,000, 5 million, for sure. But, you know, and like you said, that's not the all the deals she's going to get endorsements-wise. She'll make a ton of money on that, as she already has. But, yeah, there's definitely money floating out there for her. It's just, it's always fun to see when you get just an iconic player like this, how many pathways open up and how many different deals come to the screen. And it's just fascinating stuff to follow.
So Caitlin Clark can also avail herself up to $250,000 in a league marketing deal and up to $100,000 in a team marketing contract if she passes on playing abroad next offseason. Or she can sign what's likely to be another one of those multi-million dollar contracts if she plays for a team in Europe or China. So the WNBA, especially after what happened with Brittany Griner, really wants their players to stay home in the United States, and they want to eventually make sure they make enough money so that they're not having to go play abroad in the offseason to compensate them and make up that lost income. So, you know, I'm sure the WNBA is going to do everything they can to keep Caitlin Clark home. But if, you know, Abu Dhabi or someone says, hey, Caitlin Clark, we're going to give you $5 or $10 million to come play here this offseason, that's going to be really hard to turn down. And frankly, it's going to be hard for the WNBA to compete with that level of money because they just can't offer it. Now, one of the things that will be interesting is these are the current WNBA salary structures. Does Caitlin Clark going to the WNBA drive up salaries? You know, does it do things like, hey, teams now have chartered flights? I mean, are you really going to put Caitlin Clark on a plane with everyone else? Even at University of Iowa, she's on a charter flight with her teammates. Is the WNBA going to put her on, you know, Delta Airlines and have her sitting next to Joe Blow on the flight? Like, I just don't see how you're going to be able to do that. So it's going to be interesting to see, does Caitlin Clark's arrival in the WNBA change things for some of the players, player salaries, you know, how they travel? And then Griggs, the WNBA has had talks about breaking away their media rights deal from the NBA's media rights deal. They feel like, hey, we can stand on our own now. We don't have to be lumped with the NBA and do the same partners that they have. Like, we can do our own media rights deal now. So is that going to be something that Caitlin Clark drives, where the interest in her, as we've seen with millions of people tuning in to watch her, that's now going to impact the media rights deals for the NBA, franchise values, so on and so on.
And we talk about how much media rights deals bring money. I mean, they're huge, massive deals. So if they did get their own, the WNBA, that would help obviously bring some salaries up because you're going to be getting more income from a TV rights deal. So I think that's a good avenue to head for. And also, as she comes in the WNBA too, you're going to get more crowds. That's going to bring more money. Ticket sales go up, jersey sales, all that stuff. So I think the key in the bottom line and everything is money, pretty much. So I think if these salaries can come up, you're going to keep the players in the country. They're not going to have to travel to play, and they're going to be happier, and the league's going to be happier. So it's a win-win when they get these salaries up.
Disney, ABC, ESPN, says ad sales revenues for the women's March Madness Final Four has already doubled last year's haul. They're sold out. Games with Clark are 7% more effective than those without Iowa's top player. This is according to research firm EDO. So again, everything that she touches turns to gold. She's a transcendent basketball player. I mean, that's what this really comes down to, right? Like, she's the all-time leading scorer. She plays with a flair that we've seen from Steph Curry and Pistol Pete Maravich. She's a great passer. She's a great shooter. She pulls up from just inside a half court and shoots threes. If you haven't watched Caitlin Clark, it's a treat. And the thing that's amazing, Griggs, is you got to remember, what is she, 20, 21 years old? You know, you put this pressure on her to perform against a team like LSU, and she comes out and has 41 points, you know, 10 rebounds, 7 assists. Nothing seems to faze her. Even in the State Farm commercial or commercials that you see her in, she's next to Jimmy Butler. Nothing seems to faze her. She acts like, hey, I belong in this moment, whether it's on the court or off the court. And I think that's one of the things that also attracts advertisers.
Well, her confidence is off the charts. I love how ESPN ABC has been showing some of the old videos when she was in like eighth grade. And you can tell she still dominated the court in eighth grade. Like, she just has so much confidence in herself. She knows she can go out there and win. She's proven it. And every game, she continues to build that confidence because she is that good. And she knows she's that good. And it shows. It's awesome to see.
All right. Before we get to the interview with Minji Rowe, let's talk about some other sports business headlines of the week. Griggs, Major League Baseball opened their season. I mean, they opened in Korea, but they really opened their season here domestically this last week. It was really interesting. They start, I think it was on a Friday. And, you know, you're going up against March Madness. There was one nationally televised game, but some other storylines. You know, these are not great ones. Obviously, in the offseason, there was the high-profile uniform debacle that became a national story, even among non-sports news outlets. See-through uniforms that were made in conjunction with Nike. The A's attempted to advance their planned relocation to Las Vegas with the release of a new set of renderings. Those kind of fell flat. Rob Manfred, the commissioner, started, you know, wondering, like, what's going on here with this situation? And then Griggs, this is terrible, but like, for the opening weekend in Oakland, I mean, usually, you know, it's one of your biggest weekends of the year. The A's drew an announced attendance of 13,522 for their season opener. Their next game, Griggs, they had 3,000 people. Over the four-game weekend, they drew 26,902 fans. But Griggs, this is the most remarkable thing. Their team in Las Vegas, their AAA affiliate, drew three times as many fans for a game as the Oakland A's. When your AAA affiliate is drawing more fans than your Major League Baseball club, that's bad news. And I don't know what Oakland's going to do here. The city of Oakland has reached out to the A's and they said, look, we'll extend your lease for up to 5 years while your, you know, stadium in Las Vegas is supposedly being built. I still have my doubts about, is that really going to happen? But what's happened here is the fans of Oakland are so mad at the owner of the A's that they've basically said, you know what? Like, the first game, we'll come to the parking lot. We'll have hot dogs and food, but we're not going in. We're not buying a ticket. We're not giving our money to the owner of a lame duck franchise that has already told us he's leaving. This is like if you're dating someone and you know you're breaking up, like, are you really going to go buy them an expensive dinner or take them on a trip to Hawaii? Probably not. You know, it's a lame duck relationship. That's what's happened here with the Oakland A's and the fans of Oakland. And they're upset, and I can't blame them one bit. So that's a messy situation. And then, Griggs, the last situation, you know, as we talked in depth on our show last week, this Shohei Ohtani, you know, interpreter gambling investigation. And again, I still think that things are going to be centered around the bookie, right? Does the bookie have receipts? Are the receipts from Shohei Ohtani? Are they from the interpreter? Are they from someone else? Did Shohei Ohtani place wagers on baseball, on other sports? Maybe he had no knowledge of this at all, and it was the interpreter who just happened to access $4.5 million. But, you know, the other thing that, as we record this, hasn't happened to my knowledge is there hasn't been charges pressed against the interpreter. So wouldn't you think, if someone steals $4.5 million from you, aren't you pressing charges against them and trying to recover that money, or at least make sure they don't do this again? It's just a bizarre story. I don't think we've heard nearly the last of it. And these, again, are headlines that Major League Baseball doesn't really need. I'm glad baseball's back. I'm looking forward to going to, you know, you and I went to the Dodgers game last year when we were in LA. Like, I like Major League Baseball, but they certainly have their share of negative headlines, as we've just outlined, as the season has gotten underway.
Well, and it's just like, you know, opening day, the marketing was awful. You couldn't see any games, didn't know when they started. I mean, I think MLB lost that. I mean, normally you're excited for opening day. And I know if you're an avid baseball fan, your team's playing, you know where they're at or you're at the game. But yeah, it's just like, I feel like I didn't even realize, oh, baseball started. You can't even watch any games unless it's the national game on Sunday night or something. But other than that, you're not going to see any of the games. So it's just kind of a miss there too. And the Oakland and the Otani stories are just both fascinating. How sad the AAA affiliate is out booking the A's. I mean, that's just embarrassing. It's sad to see.
Yeah, we'll see how this all unfolds. Those are, you know, some interesting stories to follow. The uniforms don't look like they're going to be recreated or adjusted. You know, who knows what's going to happen in Oakland and who knows what's going to happen with Otani, but we'll continue to follow those stories closely.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Fans walk into stadiums with one thing, their phone. It's their ticket, their wallet, and how they stay in touch. That's why the best teams connect their venues with Boingo Wireless. Teams like the LA Clippers, Atlanta Hawks, Chicago Bears, and San Diego Padres trust Boingo to connect their stadiums and arenas with cutting-edge 5G and Wi-Fi. These teams know that connectivity isn't just another amenity. It's critical infrastructure that drives revenue, makes venues safer, and takes the fan experience to new heights. Take Petco Park as an example. Boingo's private 5G network at Petco Park helped increase the stadium's food and beverage revenue by 10% by making the mobile payment process completely frictionless and increasing the volume of beers sold. With Boingo, Padres fans enjoy cashless concessions and more time enjoying the action. Where will a connected stadium take your team? From mobile ticketing to security cameras to kiosks, connect every piece of stadium technology with Boingo's converged wireless networks. Boingo's neutral host networks feature distributed antenna systems and small cells to deliver fast Wi-Fi service and cellular coverage for AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, and more. As you plan for the future of your stadium, make 5G part of your game plan and choose Boingo Wireless as your trusted connectivity partner. Learn more by downloading Boingo's free 5G playbook for stadiums and arenas. Head to boingo.com/5G stadium to get your copy. That's boingo.com/5G stadium.
Now, back to Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
All right, I wanted to get to another bizarre story. So, a few years ago, 2021, Glenn Taylor, the now 82-year-old owner of the NBA's Minnesota Timberwolves and the WNBA's Minnesota Lynx, he agreed to sell those teams in installments to former Major League Baseball star Alex Rodriguez and multi-billionaire Mark Lohr. This is a weird deal because usually if you buy a team, it's like, you know, you're buying it now. You don't go buy a house and say, you know what? I'm going to pay for the house in, you know, three installments. I guess that's what a mortgage is, but rarely do you see a team sold in parts. It's, you know, hey, this is when the money's due. You're coming up with the price. You take ownership of the team. Now, what happened from 2021 to now is the team value of the Timberwolves went from about $1.5 billion to about $3 billion. Right? So it's essentially doubled in time. Well, last week, Glenn Taylor pulled the plug on the sale of the Timberwolves and Lynx. So, you know, the installments were 20%, 20%, and another 40% was due last week. And there had been various stories about, you know, did A-Rod and Lohr have the money for the last installment to go from 40% owners to majority owners and take over ownership from Glenn Taylor? Well, A-Rod and Lohr say they had the money and that they did everything they were supposed to do contractually in order to take over the Timberwolves and Lynx. Glenn Taylor says didn't go according to plan and neither team is for sale now. And Griggs, I can promise you one thing. There will be lawyers. And if you're A-Rod and Lohr, you're going to try and buy this team once and for all from Glenn Taylor. Maybe you're going to be paying more. And if you're Glenn Taylor, you're like, hey, this team doubled in value. I'm going to sell them now at $3 billion, not $1.5. So either it's a new conversation and a new sales price with A-Rod and Lore. It's $3 billion, not $1.5 billion. Or you're going to take them somewhere else. Or Glenn Taylor might just go, you know, we're good for the first time in a long time. We have one of the top teams. We have one of the top stars in Anthony Edwards. Like, this is kind of fun. I'm not selling the team. So this is going to be another interesting story to watch. What does the NBA do? If you're A-Rod and Lore, I don't want to own 40% of a team that I thought I was going to get majority share of. And my business partner is Glenn Taylor, who reneged on the deal that I thought I had. So I'd be selling my 40% share if they can't ultimately take ownership and control of the Timberwolves and the Lynx. But it's a messy story. It's not one that the WNBA or the NBA wants. But I'll say this, Griggs, if you're Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, it's when you sell a franchise, you want it to always go for the highest price. You would much rather this go for $3 billion than $1.5 billion. So teams that follow, you know, people can't say, well, they only paid $1.5 billion for the Timberwolves, and they're pretty good, and they have Anthony Edwards. You know, why should I pay more than that for the Trailblazers or, you know, another team that may come up for sale in the future? You want that $3 billion mark. So now, hey, we just sold another team for $3 billion. That's the going price for an NBA team.
That's like when you buy a house and the comps in the neighborhood, you know, you're never going to buy down because that one sold for $1.5 million, you know, so it's the same kind of messy story. But I agree. It's these sales are so there's so many moving pieces. You've got stars and celebrities involved with Rodriguez and stuff. So it's like there's always just like so many different backstories. So this will be a fun one to watch. And I think it's kind of just tipping the surface now. We've heard little blips about it, but I think it's going to continue to get bigger. And you said it, lawyers and money are involved. So we'll hear about it more and more as it gets closer.
Well, another thing that's weird about this story is it's almost like A-Rod and Lore had to dip into their piggy bank to like come up with the last 40% payment. And, you know, you read all these stories about where they were trying to get financing. And, you know, again, A-Rod made a lot of money, but he's not a billionaire as far as I know. And if you spend all your money to buy the team, then you wonder, well, how are they going to operate the team? How are they going to pay the players? Like, there's a lot of costs and expenses around running an NBA and WNBA team. So I wonder if behind the scenes, maybe the NBA was kind of like, well, wait a minute here. We know what Glenn Taylor has. We've vetted him. He's been an owner for a long time. A-Rod and Lore are going to spend all the money in their piggy bank just buying the team, and they're going to have none left over to actually operate the team. And oh, by the way, we'd much rather this team sell for $3 billion than $1.5 billion. So a weird story. Again, if I'm the NBA in the future, I don't want someone buying a team in installments. I want, hey, Matt Ishbia buys the Suns. It's $4 billion. Boom. You're buying the team that day. Here's all the money. You're not doing this over the course of 3 years. I would think that would be something the NBA would look at in the future and go, you're not buying in installments. You're buying all at one time. We have to know that you have the money. And, you know, in the meantime, the franchise value isn't increasing over the course of 3 years, and you just got it for the price that it was 3 years ago. That doesn't seem to make sense.
Well, it's like when you lend your friend, you know, money, he's like, I'll pay you back in three installments, you know, and then the last two and you never see him because it's like, oh, hey, he's my friend. I won't bug him about it. So I feel like the same way. I thought when this first came out, I saw red flags like installments. That's kind of a weird way to purchase a expensive team. It's not like you're paying $20, you know, it's a little bit more money than that. So yeah, it's kind of a weird one.
All right, our last headline, and we did an entire show around this in, I think, the fall of 2022. So go back and listen to it. The fall of FTX. So last week, Sam Bankman-Fried was sentenced to 25 years in prison for defrauding customers of the collapsed multi-billion dollar cryptocurrency exchange. And, you know, you may go, well, okay, how does that impact sports? Well, you had Tom Brady and Giselle. You had Steph Curry. You even had my guy, Larry David, tied to this thing. They bought a Super Bowl commercial. They paid 20 years, or actually 19 years, weird deal, on naming rights for the Miami Heat Arena I mean, they were throwing money around like it was, you know, growing on trees. And now the person behind this, and if you don't know about the collapse of FTX, like if you're our age, Griggs, and we talked about this on that show in 2022, this is bigger than Enron by a mile, right? It's one of the biggest financial scandals we've ever seen. And Sam Bankman-Fried is now 32 years old. So he's going to be in jail if he goes this full sentence until he's 57 years old by my math. But, you know, just ripped off so many people. And, you know, there was the big trial, and but this had a huge impact on the sports world. And, you know, people, again, like Tom Brady, Giselle, Steph Curry, the Miami Heat, they'll never see the money that they were promised as part of the FTX dealings. So I just wanted to mention that as our final headline of the week. It's a big deal. If you read into it or you listen to our show from 2022, like this had many layers to it reaching into the sports world.
Yeah, it's a deep story, and it's just the scamming world and the people that do that. I just, nothing makes me more angry. Like, I just feel for every person. My dad, I told this on this on the show, worked for PGE for 45 years and lost so much retirement because of Enron. And that was just a little dabble of that. Like you said, this is so much bigger, and it's got so many more people affected, and so many amounts of money is crazy. So it's a big deal, and I think he should be serving longer time than he is. And it's sad that these people aren't going to get their money back. That's the worst part, too, is they invested in this and trusted people, and then they just, you know, don't have any money. So it's a bad story, and it's a big story. So crazy.
Hopefully there are more checks and balances around things like this. I mean, last week we talked around checks and balances around accessing $500,000 wire transfers to send to people, you know, via Shohei Ohtani story. You would hope in the future with something like FTX that, you know, as I've always said on this show, if something seems too good to be true, it usually is. And that was a story where it's like everyone's making money and, oh my gosh, they're doing 19-year naming rights deals and they're doing Super Bowl commercials and Tom Brady and Giselle and Steph Curry are getting even richer than they already are. And it's like, let's stop here and look at this a little bit more closely. Like, you know, the guy's in his late 20s. Is he really delivering what he says he's going to be delivering? He scammed all kinds of people, celebrities and non-celebrities, out of money. So hopefully this is a deterrent to other people from doing this again. It is pretty interesting how someone like that could rise to this level of influence with people like the Tom Brady's and Steph Curry's of the world and the Miami Heats of the world. But, you know, hopefully there's more checks and balances on all of this kind of stuff in the future.
Well, it reminds me of years ago, there was the fire, I think it was called Music Festival, I forget the name, and it was a whole scam. He had this whole island set up and bought all these tickets and these big artists, and you're going to meet them face to face, and you get to be on the island with them for a weekend and whatever, and then they showed up and it was a train wreck. They didn't have food, they didn't have toilets, they didn't have anything, and nobody showed up. None of the artists showed up, so it was similar kind of a thing. Young kid starts this thing, sells all these tickets, and then, oh, doesn't exist.
Yeah. All right, quickly. Who do you like in the women's and the men's final fours? Who's going to walk away with the trophy?
I think, I mean, again, how do you go against South Carolina on the women's side? 36-0. I mean, they're just a beast, but you just never know. There's some great stars. You got Paige Beckers and Iowa still in there too. So I still think South Carolina is going to pull away with the championship on that one. For the dudes, I think NC State's going to come to their Cinderella is going to come to a close with Zach Edey and Purdue. I think Purdue's going to get by on that one. And I think Bama will probably lose and UConn's going to win the championship against Purdue.
Yeah. I mean, I can't argue with those picks. I think UConn is the best team. I think UConn and Purdue have been the two best teams all year long on the men's side. So it would be a titanic matchup if those two go against each other in the finals. Alabama and NC State both have done, you know, great things in this tournament. But the two best teams all year long have been UConn and Purdue. And then on the women's side, you know, we both pick South Carolina. How do you pick against Dawn Staley and an undefeated team? But with that being said, is, you know, we saw against LSU, if Caitlin Clark decides to go, you know, into video game mode and just completely control the pace and outcome of the game, pretty hard to bet against her. But, you know, I'm really, I think Paige Beckers has been forgotten because of her injuries. It's going to be fun to watch her and Caitlin Clark match up. And then the other underlying story there is Caitlin Clark, according to interviews with her, she really wanted to go play for Gino Auriemma and UConn. I mean, what girl doesn't, right? What young woman doesn't? They that's the signature program. This is his 23rd Final Four as a head coach. That is a dynasty, ladies and gentlemen. So, of course, you want to play for the biggest and the best. And she wasn't even recruited. So this is a chance to say, hey, Gino, this is what you missed out on. And again, if she goes into video game mode and decides to control the game and have, like, you know, a huge, you know, performance to show him what he missed out on, I'm not betting against Caitlin Clark either. So I just want to see, you know, huge ratings for the women's games, which I think we'll have. And as I said at the beginning of this tournament, I will not be surprised one bit, Griggs, if the women's Final Four ratings and ticket sales outperform the men's Final Four ratings and ticket sales and ticket prices.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's proven all season that the women have shown up and the stadiums are full, and you've seen it throughout the tournament. Every stadium is full. So I agree. I think that would not be shocking at all. But yeah, these are going to be fun games, fun weekends coming up here, because it's must-watch TV on both sides. It's going to be good to see.
All right, a quick reminder, next week's show, it's going to be a special one for us. We're celebrating 20 years of Sports Business Radio in the year 2024. We launched Sports Business Radio in April of 2004. Well, the Grand Poobahs are going to get together at the Burger Bar in my house next week to record a special conversation. Griggs, it's going to be you and me and co-founder Keith Foreman. We're hoping to have Nathan Roach, who now works at Adidas in their tennis division, and Bobby Horser, who was the original producer of Sports Business Radio. The five of us will get together. We'll record a special conversation looking back on 20 years of Sports Business Radio. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be the first time that all five of us have been together in the same room, as bizarre as that sounds. We'll watch the men's championship game, whoever that may be. We'll have some steaks and we'll roll tape, thanks to you. So yeah, it's going to be a fun conversation on our show next week. Of course, we'll recap some of the numbers from the women and the men, if we have those, as we record. But it's going to be a fun show.
Yeah, I think we'll have some good laughs too, because that's a fun crew. These are great guys. It's going to be fun getting together and just, you know, having some good conversation of the 20 years we've been through with knowing each other. And all of us, I don't think I've even met Nathan face to face. So that'll be fun to actually meet him. So yeah, it's going to be a fun time.
I wish we could go back and dig up some of the old episodes from, you know, those early days, because man, we've come a long way. And there are some blooper outtakes and some funny things. I'm sure we'll recall those in our conversation.
Well, my favorite thing was how your early radio voice was. You were more like this. It was like Brian Berger at Sports Business Radio.
I was way too hyper. Someone told me early on, they're like, bring the energy. And I think it was like I had five things of Red Bull before I went on the air. And I was like, oh, I need to dial that back. The other thing too, and I'll just throw this out there to any aspiring broadcasters or journalists, is I would go into interviews and I'd have my list of, here's my list of 10 or 15 questions. I was well prepared, but it was like I had to get through my questions and I didn't listen as well as I could have to the answers. And I didn't let the person I was interviewing kind of guide where the conversation went, because I had to get through my 10 or 15 questions that I had researched.
Yep.
Well, now, hopefully, I think I've become a much better interviewer. Hopefully, our audience would agree with that. I go with the flow of the interview. But yeah, remember, I was coming from doing color commentary and play-by-play of basketball and baseball, and I hadn't done an interview format show. And then I went from doing it with someone, Keith Foreman, to doing it by myself. So, you know, we've had some evolutions of this show, but yes, if you go back to the early days, oh my gosh, I cover my ears and I'm like, whoo, that first interview with David Stern, like it was great, but I would like to think that my interview with him in New York on stage in 2016, that was one of the signature interviews that we've ever had on this show. And yes, I didn't sound like I was on Red Bull for 5 hours before the show. And if I recall, Griggs, we stayed with our friend Brad Kinzer in a very cramped hotel room. So I didn't even get much sleep the night before the David Stern interview anyways.
Correct. We all shared beds and there was dump trucks and garbage trucks beeping the entire night.
Well, let's set the record straight on that. You and Brad shared a bed. Like you guys had just met. Hey, Griggs.
Nice to meet you. Let's get to bed.
Griggs, you guys are sharing a bed. And then I'm over here in the other bed. And the size of the entire hotel room in New York was a little bit bigger than a postage stamp. Yeah. I think my closet that I have here at home is a little bit bigger than the hotel room that we stayed in where you and Brad first met.
Yeah, we've had some great stories for sure. And credit to you on the interview thing. You've definitely gotten better. Your interviews are great. You have a good style now. And you definitely, that's key, listening. You watch a Howard Stern, he'll ask two questions in a whole hour interview because he just sets it up and then listens. And that's the key. So yeah, you've gotten way better at it. And 20 years has paid off.
All right, coming up next, Minji Rowe, the chief strategy officer of Gainbridge. They recently signed Caitlin Clark to a multi-year deal to be a spokesperson and an ambassador. We're going to go inside the construction of that deal with the person from Gainbridge who helped construct that deal. Why did they sign Caitlin Clark, other than she's one of the hottest names in sports right now? What are they hoping to do with her to activate that partnership? It's really interesting to go inside of this deal with one of her new business partners. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back. Hey everyone, Brian Berger here. I love innovation and I love tech. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about what Matsing is doing. You may have a solid wireless network at your venue, but do you have the highest performing antennas in the world to power your network? Matsing is the leader in multi-beam lens antennas. Venues such as AT&T Stadium, home of the Dallas Cowboys, Allegiant Stadium, which is home of the Las Vegas Raiders and Super Bowl 58, and Amalie Arena, which is home of the Tampa Bay Lightning, all have Matsing's innovative lens antennas. As a matter of fact, Matsing's antennas are deployed at over 100 venues globally, including 50% of NFL venues, 35% of NBA and NHL venues, several Formula One racetracks, and even at the upcoming 2024 Paris Olympics. Do you want to deliver a fully connected venue experience to your fans? Then Matsing is the key to delivering a best-in-class mobile experience for fans who want to post pictures, watch videos, order food, or place real-time wagers. For more information on how Matsing can help your venue, visit matsing.com. That's M-A-T-S-I-N-G.com. Or email Tracy Salazar at T-R-A-C-Y-S-A-L-A-Z-A-R at matsing.com. That's Tracy Salazar at Matsing.com. Matsing is the exclusive antenna partner of Sports Business Radio.
Now, back to Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
My guest is Minji Rowe. She is the Chief Strategy Officer of Gainbridge. Minji, thanks for joining me on Sports Business Radio. How are you?
I'm awesome. Thank you for having me, Brian.
All right, before we get into this conversation, give our listeners a little bit of background into you. How did you wind up with Gainbridge? I see on your LinkedIn profile, you're a women's sports and especially basketball enthusiast. I always find it interesting to find out how people landed in their current roles.
Sure. I'll try to keep it quick. Always a basketball girl. Grew up in Chicago in the 90s. So Jordan, Bulls, just the, oh yeah, we're going to win the championship again this year, 72-10, the whole thing. And so, sadly, I was always better at school than I was at basketball, but yeah, I always managed to find a way to keep it a part of my life. And so, played in high school, played on the club team at Northwestern, and actually spent my senior year working for the Chicago Sky leading up to their launch season, which was amazing. And then went off to finance, you know, in New York City to have a real job. And at the time, right, like the WNBA is still kind of, you know, in growth mode, but 20 years ago, it was like me and like six other people, right?
Wow.
That loved the WNBA. And that first year, right, they offered, this guy did, for me to stay on full time. And I had already committed to finance. And that first year, I made five times more in finance than I would have, you know, if I had stayed. But always stay connected. My background's in equity derivatives and sales and trading side of investment banks. But ran the New York City Gay Basketball League kind of in my spare time. And after finance, I think my best friend and I decided to found a startup called Parity. And he and I are both big sports fans. He was my boss, you know, back then, and I've been working together still for 20 years. But we launched Parity because we noticed there's this huge gap in the market for women athletes. And so it was still is a sponsorship platform for pro women athletes, matching them up with sponsorship deals. And we sold it to our largest client, which was Group 1001. And as a result of that, my co-founder and best friend and boss is Bill Shelton, who is the current chief marketing officer of Group 1001, which is the parent company for GameBridge, as well as a couple of other insurance companies. And I look after strategy.
That's amazing. Well, it seems like you're using all your experiences for this current role. So that's fun.
Yeah, these conversations are kind of surreal for me because it really brings a ton of stuff that I am super passionate about. And so mostly surreal, but really exciting.
All right. So let's talk about GameBridge and your partnerships. First of all, you've gone heavy into women's sports, which I think is great. You've got Grand Slam champion Billie Jean King. You've got golfer Annika Sorenstam. But most recently, you announced a partnership with University of Iowa basketball star Caitlin Clark. Talk to me about your strategy of going into women's sports, which is growing by the day. And obviously, Caitlin is the biggest of the big names out there in women's athletics right now.
Yeah, I think all credit to Dan Tauris, who's the CEO of Group 1001. And if you look at the timing of Billie Jean King and Annika Sorenstam, he was ahead of the curve. Right now, you see, you know, the big valuations and people getting out, and every day there's a new PE firm kind of getting in the women's sports game. But he got in years ago, and so Caitlin Clark is a natural extension of a lot of the partnerships that we've had, and he's been very clear, which obviously is near and dear to my heart. It is a business decision, right? It was harder to see a few years ago, but you are now really starting to see like people actually exiting out of team investments as an example, right? But it is first and foremost there's money to be made here, right? And so Caitlin Clark is no different from that, right? I don't think it's a push to say she's really changed the landscape of women's sports. You see it in the attendance numbers, you see it in the viewership figures. And so she coincided with our expanding our product set to go a little bit younger. Right, people typically think about insurance and annuities as a retirement product, which they are. But we released a product in December of last year called Fast Break, just happened to be a sports themed, right? Which caters to a much younger audience. And then we also launched Parity Flex, which is an annuity designed for women. And so, knowing those things were coming on the horizon. Right. And knowing that we were very focused on women's sports from like an investment and also value from like an authentic, credible voice perspective, that was really the genesis of our working with Caitlin, and obviously very thrilled to have made it happen.
I'm really interested about working with a college athlete. You know, again, Billie Jean King, Annika Sorenstam, when you sign them, they're pros. NIL changed things a few years ago, name, image, and likeness. What was it like working with a college athlete, signing her, activating her? Because you've got different rules when a player is still in college.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think someone like Caitlin Clark kind of straddles the line, right? In terms of, you know, if you look at her sponsorship portfolio and the sheer number and the size of the brands that she's working with, right? Like, whether or not she stays at Iowa, I think, is kind of a moot point in terms of her actual economic value, right? And so from our perspective, It was a very explicit conversation. We don't have a view, right? When she declares, right? It's a multi-year partnership. And I can confidently tell you, we were not factoring in when she was going to declare, right? And so from our perspective, it's just like any other deal, right? Now, I think where the NIL issue comes into play is a lot of the logistical details of activating with her, right? Because there are marks involved from an NCAA and a conference and a school perspective. But besides that, I think nothing really different from our previous partnerships.
For something like this, do you and your team sit down with Caitlin personally? Are you dealing with XL Sports Management, who's her agency? Walk me through the process of how this deal comes about.
There are phases to these relationships, right? And it so far largely is similar in that there is an agency that runs point on the conversations, right? And so there are stakeholders on the other side that they are coordinating with, whether it's Caitlin or Caitlin's family, right? And so the negotiation of the deal and the actual execution of it is done with or was done with the agency. As we get into a lot of the activations that are upcoming, right? Like not a surprise to people, right? There are things where she'll be making appearances, right? Or different shoot days where like we will be interacting with her directly. So some distinct phases to the actual deal and then the execution of it.
Yeah, I mean, I would just imagine, like, if you're going to enter into a multi-year partnership with someone, you probably want to have a conversation with the actual person that you're entering into a partnership with versus, you know, just the agency. So I was just curious about, you know, how many conversations you may have had and just the feel that Caitlin gets to get for Gainbridge and you get to get for her.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair question. I think I was thinking about this the other day in terms of just how much conversation she generates, right? Like if your job was to actually like stay on top of that, would that be more than a full-time job? Probably, right? And so there is just so much content on her that I think you get a sense of how she is as a public-facing persona really easily, right? There's a ton of material out there. In terms of her evaluating us, I suspect, and I don't know this, right? This is just my hypothesizing. I'm not sure how many brands came to her already with somebody like Billie Jean King or Annika Sorenstam on their partnership roster.
Right.
So I suspect it's a little bit different of an evaluation, right?
Yeah. Like you said, she has so many other companies that she works with, Nike and State Farm and A2. How do you stand out? You know, you're trying to stand out anyways, but then she's got other partners and you want her to be associated with Gainbridge. How do you stand out so that she becomes synonymous with your company?
Part of that is exclusivity from a vertical perspective, which everyone does, right? And so from a financial services and a retail platform, like we are the only organization that you'll be seeing her with. We're spending a lot of time thinking about what the actual best way is to capitalize on our relationship with her, right? And what I mean by that is there are very obvious things that we do, right? There's a commercial with her for Gainbridge, right? Like you'll see her in all of our paid advertising across all of our social media channels. That stuff is obvious. But then there, as a financial services self-serve platform, like we have to be really thoughtful and interesting about the content we do. And so none of this is set in stone, right? But some of the conversations or the discussions that we're having around, okay, like what does Caitlin Clark's financial journey look like as a woman athlete? Like how does that compare to Billie Jean King's journey, right? And what does that conversation look like between the two of them, right? And so it's a matter of standing out by leveraging her story, right? And how it fits into our products and our platform in a way that actually makes sense and isn't contrived.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's really interesting, Gainbridge has made a big investment in kind of Indiana basketball. You're on the Gainbridge Fieldhouse, which is home to the Indiana Pacers of the NBA and the Indiana Fever of the WNBA. I'll say this because I know you can't, but it's no coincidence that the Indiana Fever have the number one pick in the next WNBA draft. And we all know that if Caitlin decides to go pro, she's going to be number one. So she could be playing in the arena that you have the naming rights to. So there could be some really good synergy here for you guys. I would imagine, you know, you're looking at this holistically too. Like, we really want to go all in on Indiana basketball, whether it's the Pacers, the Fever, and now potentially your new star ambassador, Caitlin Clark, could be in the mix as well.
Yeah. So we started discussions before the draft lottery, right? I don't think, you know, it was a surprise that the Fever were very likely to get the first pick given the statistics. But it was a very explicit decision that we are doing this because she has national firepower, right? If you look at the games that she sells out, they're not just home games, right? And if you look at even the WNBA tickets following, you know, her declaring for the draft, like all of those single game tickets for the Fever and visiting away games are all starting to sell out as well, which I'm not sure we've ever seen before. We do have deep ties to Indianapolis. It goes much beyond basketball, right? Indy 500, we're the title sponsor. Obviously, our headquarters are there. But when I tell you, we found out the same time everyone else found out when she made that Instagram post a couple weeks ago declaring for the draft. Like, the contract is structured so that, you know, it didn't really matter when, because we were in no matter what. And so it really is an incredible stroke of luck, right, and coincidence, because it absolutely helps from a logistical perspective. But she is a national icon, right? She's going to dictate the conversation around women's sports and women's basketball at a national level going forward, right? And we are a national company. We sell annuities in 49 states. And so that was what we were thinking. The Indianapolis connection, I think, is just a very lucky thing that we've looked into.
Don't take this the wrong way, but do you hear from people now that maybe you didn't hear from before the announcement that say, hey, I hadn't really paid attention to what Gainbridge is doing, but now because of your relationship with Caitlin Clark, I'm digging more deeply into the company and its options and if it may be a fit for me.
Yeah, but that's what we mean, right? By it's
right.
A business.
Yeah.
It's a business decision, right? That absolutely happens. And that's what we wanted to happen, right? And I will say it's been really amazing to see it's everyone, right? It's potential clients, it's other partners, you know, that are in our ecosystem, but it's also internally, right? The value of, you know, how many proposals do you think Caitlin Clark is getting to partner, right? As a ambassador or a spokesperson, like, you got to imagine it's insane. And so internally, I think I underestimated, right, as a women's basketball fan, just how far-reaching it was, right? And people saying, we got Caitlin Clark? Because she is different. She's different. Like, she's the winner now, right? She is the topic of conversation now, right? And so it's been across all of our different audiences and stakeholders and just a phenomenal opportunity.
Let me talk to you a little bit about some of the activation specifically. So correct me if I'm wrong, but I think wasn't her signature on an Indy car recently. So, you know, I think that's clever. That's outside the box. Again, it's got the Indy sports theme to it. And then, you know, I would imagine just a retweet from her or a post on her social about her partnership with Gainbridge. There's another valuable activation. Are there any other activations that you're looking at other than, like you said, appearances or commercials? Or because I really do think that, like, the signature on the car, that's clever. That's, you don't see that every day.
Yeah. And I think that's a focus of ours this year. If you look at our overall sports sponsorship portfolio, it's multi-sport, it's multi-geographic locations. And so there's a lot of work to be done for all of us to pull that together, right? And so, you know, you're seeing her name on the car is a good example of that. hopefully knock on wood, because these are some of the busiest people that you can imagine, right? Like there's a lot of interesting cross content partnerships, whether it's Caitlin and Annika or Caitlin and BJK, knock on wood, maybe all three of them together. None of that is set in stone. Those are all things that we're thinking about. I think I already talked about the paid advertising, which obviously is a no-brainer, and some of the commercials that we'll be doing, which you know is a scheduling challenge, right? More than anything else. But you'll unsurprisingly be seeing her from like an in-person appearance, commercials, some of our existing sponsorship events. All of that is coming this year.
I used to do a lot of work with Nike years ago, you know, and they have a sports marketing department. And if someone's making an appearance, you send someone from the sports marketing department to go be with the athlete and to interact with them and make sure everything goes well. Is that part of your role? Like when Caitlin's filming her commercial or when she's doing something prominent, will you be there to interact with her and make sure that the Gainbridge Caitlin Clark relationship is going smoothly?
I hope it is. I think we have a very talented sponsorship and also marketing team who does that all the time, right? Given our sponsorships in NASCAR and F1 and the Pacers game, right? This is a very big piece, but it fits into a larger sponsorship portfolio. And so those are all things that we do on a regular basis. And so, you know, I'm not sure if this is the question what you're asking, but like, will I be making that a part of my job? Probably.
I mean, I think it's good, right? Like you want the best representatives from the company interacting with your brand ambassador and answering any questions and making sure everything goes smoothly. And, you know, usually what I've learned is the athlete and their rep, they want to make sure, like, if this is what we said, like, this is going to be an hour long shoot, or this is a half day shoot, or this is a full day shoot. Like, they just want to make sure that it's going according to, you know, what was in the contract, so to speak.
Yeah. Totally agree. Again, you know, I think, you know, a couple of weeks ago we were doing an interview, magazine interview and shoot with Billie Jean King, right? In her home. And so we're very aware of keeping things on time and making sure that it's all within kind of our agreed upon deliverables and whatnot. We're already, you know, fighting over Indiana Fever home tickets and who gets to go and whatnot. And so at the very least, you'll be seeing me at the field house.
That's amazing. You talked a little bit about your investment in women's sports and how it's a business decision and, you know, it's really paying dividends. When did Gainbridge decide to get into sports overall? Like you just mentioned some of the other properties, F1, IndyCar, you know, obviously we're talking about the three brand spokespeople that you have on the women's side. But when did Gainbridge basically say, look, sports is the front porch to get into business with some of the people that we're hoping become customers?
Yeah. Kind of pull up the actual inking of the sponsorship. But basically, the theory is this. Gainbridge is a direct-to-consumer platform, right? There's a segment of the population where these investors want to buy annuities directly, right, without having to deal with or work through a broker. If you are going to be a direct-to-consumer brand, you do have to have some sort of brand awareness, right? And so there are a couple of ways that you can go about it. But if you think about some of the most memorable TV commercials that you've seen, right, whether it's the Geico Get-Go or Mayhem or, you know, Flo or Turning Into Your Parents, like what do all those things have in common? Those are all insurance company commercials, right? And so that is to say, being in front of people in a memorable way is kind of a requirement if you're going to be in the insurance space. I think Dan's vision, which is an interesting and different one, right, is I'm going to do that through sports, right? And so Indy 500 is a great example. I certainly didn't know, maybe you did, single largest sporting event in the country is actually the Indy 500. And so, you know, it started years ago. I can get you the specific year. I don't have it off the top of my head. But between that, the LPGA tournament, which has been in existence since at least 2016. And obviously it's grown over the years, but that's been the conscious way to get our name out there.
This is such a subjective question, but you know, I know when people are looking at deals like this, they're like, okay, if we sign this person and we make this investment, we need 5x return, whether it's with new customers, whether it's with media exposure. Is there a formula that you typically look at when you're signing deals, whether it's with an individual like Caitlin Clark or a team like the Indiana Pacers or the Indiana Fever, that you're like, okay, this is what we want this partnership to produce?
You're asking about an attribution model for all of our marketing sponsorships. I think if we had a good answer to that, we would be in a totally different ballgame and making up all the money in a different way. with that said, it's something that we're working on all the time. I think, you know, there's a meeting today to go over the first round of numbers from all of the Caitlin Clark commercials that we ran through ESPN through March Madness, or the first couple rounds, right? And so that is to say there isn't one formula, but is an extremely complicated question that we're always trying to get our arms around. We're nowhere close. I'm not sure anybody is. And so it's a work in progress. And I've been telling a couple people this, like, please ask me again in 6 months, because I think we'll have a much better sense of the numbers and kind of what we're seeing in terms of, okay, what is it actually done, right?
Yeah. Is there anything that I didn't ask you about with the Caitlin Clark partnership that you want to mention to our listeners?
The products that that you'll be seeing her, you know, interact with and obviously rep for us, Fast Break and Parity Flex, they're different. They're different than the annuities that are out there. And obviously they're for a specific consumer who wants to take it on, right? DIY it. And so look out for some interesting content there.
I should have asked you this as like the first question. Explain to our audience who may not know, what's an annuity?
Awesome. The simplest way to think about it is it's like a bank CD. So you get a crediting rate, you know, typically every year. And your money grows over time. The very basic vanilla structure is you don't lose money, right? You just get an interest rate. But the difference is it's not a bank, it's an insurance company. And so that affords you some really interesting product features, right? Like you don't pay tax, right? You defer tax until you start taking those deposits or taking withdrawals during retirement. In the case of our Parity Flex product, there's something called a guaranteed lifetime withdrawal benefit, which basically means we'll give you a paycheck for every single year you're alive, even if you eat into everything that you've invested. Like, we'll keep paying you because you don't know when you're going to die, right? And it's a horrible thing to outlive your money. So those are the funkier things that we can start building into an insurance product. And so that is an annuity. You go to gamebridge.io, right? It's a self-service platform, and you can invest online without needing to talk to anybody.
That's great. I think it's so important to educate people on financial literacy. We try and do that a lot on the show. You know, especially, again, there's name, image, and likeness in high schools in some states right now. So people are having to educate themselves on financial literacy much younger than they used to. And I think it's great that you're going after the women's demo and the younger demo via Caitlin Clark. I think that's really smart.
Thank you. I think so too.
Minji Rowe, the Chief Strategy Officer of Gainbridge, thank you so much for joining me on Sports Business Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Talent, hard work, focus, and determination got you here. Now take the right steps to prepare for your future and ensure that you stay at the top of your game, your business, your craft. Morgan Stanley Sports and Entertainment is a division of Morgan Stanley Wealth Management, dedicated to serving the unique and sophisticated needs of elite and professional athletes, entertainers, executives, creators, and other top talent and professionals in the sports and entertainment industry. They deliver the education, strategies, and expertise you need to help advance your financial game plan at every stage of your career journey. They speak the language. They know your business. Morgan Stanley will work with you to achieve your goals. I've trusted Morgan Stanley with my personal wealth management for almost 20 years. Visit Morgan Stanley at morganstanley.com/GSE. Well, that's it for this edition of Sports Business Radio. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks to the Sports Business Radio team, Brian Griggs, Nicole Wardle, and Josh Blank. A reminder to kindly subscribe to our award-winning podcast. Our feed features 20 years of podcasts with the biggest names in sports and business. Go to Apple or Spotify Podcasts and click on the plus sign in the upper right-hand corner. That way, every episode of Sports Business Radio will be delivered to your listening device each week. We'd love to have you give us a 5-star rating and write a review of our podcast as well. It'll take you just 2 minutes. I'm Brian Berger. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon right here on Sports Business Radio.
Follow Sports Business Radio on Facebook, X at SB Radio, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and online at sportsbusinessradio.com. SBR is produced by Brian Griggs at GriggsProductions.com.